welcome to the Somerset Emotional Wellbeing Podcast. My name is Dr. Andrew Tresidder from NHS Somerset, and I'm joined by my friend and colleague,
Dr. Peter Bagshaw, GP and Mental Health Lead at NHS Somerset.
And today we're going to talk about Dyslexia Matters, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Lorna Edwards. So, Lorna, please would you introduce yourself, tell us who you are, and also how did you hear about coming on the podcast?
Hi, so great to be with you. My name's Lorna. So I'm a senior neonatal intensive care nurse at Musgrove. And I was saying, I listen to your podcast quite regularly. And the one that really got me thinking about getting in touch was the one with a guy that's got a stutter who also works at Musgrove. And it just got me thinking that was really interesting, kind of a personal perspective on something. So I thought I would get in touch.
Patrick was a great guest and had a wonderful story, and I'm sure you're the same. So dyslexia, I think, is something a lot of us think we know about. One of my former GP partners had dyslexia, so I know a little bit about the problems, but I think we underestimate just how difficult it can be to have dyslexia. Tell us a bit about how you knew that you had dyslexia, what sort of problems it's caused you, and how you've learned to overcome that.
Sure. Yeah. So it's like you said, it's about 1 in 10 people have it. However, from a little bit of reading that I looked up, about 80% don't get diagnosed until after school. And school is when you normally figure out there might be something that you're struggling with. So that was definitely how it was for me. So primary school, I wasn't diagnosed, but I had difficulty. I was a slow reader. I didn't join up my handwriting for a long time. I had a little bit of extra support, but nothing major. Secondary school, I like to think I got by. And then by college, I had a great teacher and she instantly realized and said, go for a diagnosis, and got it from there. And she was great. She was a turning point. I really enjoyed meeting her. I think she had it herself, although we didn't talk about it that much. But my dad definitely has it, and it is a genetic thing. And that's kind of school-wise how it affected me.
That's really interesting. And sadly, I've got friends who were told they were stupid at school, who were subsequently found to have dyslexia. I hope that didn't happen to you.
No, not directly. My dad has it. I don't think he was ever formally diagnosed, but he certainly does. And because of that, my family were very supportive. And the schools were great. They didn't necessarily do anything wrong, but I think there were certain things that could have helped that weren't there. I think one thing that I think about now, I had multiple hearing tests as a child and nothing was ever found wrong. And I just wonder if actually it wasn't that I wasn't hearing or listening, I just wasn't understanding, and maybe a different technique would have helped at the time. But obviously these are all just thoughts I've had.
So for people who think they may have dyslexia or have children who they think may have dyslexia, who are struggling at school, what tips can you give them to get an earlier diagnosis than is happening at the moment?
So I think schools are definitely better. I think schools are the way forward, because that's where you're doing a lot of your learning, or a certain type of learning, and where reading, writing and grammar and those things that are classically dyslexic struggle with are really important. And just noticing, you know, if you're maybe a little bit slower at reading is one of them, and writing and things like that, than your peers, or if parents themselves have struggled, just chat with the teachers, chat with other people. There's lots of great things online and charities and all sorts that are really supportive in these things, and that's nationwide and local as well, which I've at the time wasn't aware of, but have looked up since.
Thanks ever so much. And I suppose I'm finding myself wondering what dyslexia means. And I think the derivation of the word is bad learning, which is a bit pejorative, but that's what Greek means, I think. And I've just Googled it and found that it says a learning difficulty that primarily affects the skills involved in accurate and fluent word reading and spelling. And is it the same for everyone with dyslexia, do you think, or does it vary?
No, it's very varied. And I think, as you said, I like to think, well, it is a learning difficulty, not disability. I like to make clear, because it doesn't affect your intelligence. It's just a different way, a slightly different way that the brain processes information. So for me, the biggest ones were the reading and writing and spelling, as well as grammar and things like that. But on top of that, there are things like organization, again, like, because the brain works slightly different. It's only a slight difference, it's nothing major, but it just means kind of organizing and planning potentially are difficult for people. So like memory skills, so that at school is difficult, because a lot of learning at school, you come to exams at the end of the year and you have to memorize a lot of things. That's the kind of learning a lot of it is, which can be a challenge. But there are definitely mild to higher levels, and I think I come somewhere in the middle personally.
Interesting. I suppose I find myself wondering how much is some of this a function of the education system, which expects us to spell correctly, whatever spelling correctly is, and is correct spelling important? Because 300 years ago, you would write it as you heard it, and so we see surnames spelt all sorts of different ways.
Exactly. I think the spelling thing for me is a big one, and that's definitely probably my biggest difficulty that I've had. And now, you know, and genuinely I can laugh about it when I spell something wrong and I notice, I'm like, oh yeah. But I think when you're younger, it can be difficult, and it does make you stand out compared to your peers a bit potentially. But yeah, spelling itself, and nowadays there's so much technology, if you do struggle with spelling, it shouldn't be an issue.
And we've focused maybe on the difficulties of having dyslexia, but I know a lot of people who somehow, because they've had that difficulty to overcome in early childhood, it's kind of made them stronger in other ways. Can that happen, or is that a myth?
No, definitely. And actually, thank you for bringing that up. There's something that I've only come across very recently, which is a hashtag and just a general thinking of dyslexic thinking and the abilities because of having dyslexia. It's not all necessarily bad things. So a lot of people find they're more creative or problem solving, because you might have struggled in some areas, like you say, that actually you find other ways. And a lot of dyslexic people feel they see the bigger picture. And so maybe the little things, for example, like spelling, don't matter quite so much, but you can see where you're heading, and therefore you can then, you know, maybe have great leadership skills, because you can support a team in moving forward. And I've found that in the NHS, I think that's really helped. And things like, so very specifically to my job, I work with babies and families. And because I can see things maybe slightly differently, I find it quite easy to explain things that might be very complicated in quite a simplified way. And I put that down to my dyslexia, absolutely. I think that's really helped me in my job.
That's really interesting. And that's great to be able to turn what could be a difficulty into a positive feature, isn't it? So apart from early recognition of dyslexia, what things have you found most helpful in dealing with the condition in a society that still does like us to spell correctly?
Yeah, I think, so support family is great. And family and friends and whoever those important people are to you is really important. And like I said, that one particular teacher made a massive difference, I think, in how I moved forward. I mean, I hated reading until I hit college. And then that changed that. And then, you know, moving forward in my career. But I think the biggest thing that has changed for me is using technology has really changed. As I got older, obviously technology has changed, and like laptops and computers and spell check, and there's something called word to text or word to speech are called a few different things, but you can speak out loud and it will write it for you on the computer. That's really helpful. Once I got my diagnosis, there are certain things that can be put in place. So for a college, and then when I went to university, you get a certain amount of extra time. So you're still expected to do the same work, but you get a certain amount of extra time for coursework and for exams because of the spelling difficulties, and just writing and reading is slower. So that was definitely a really positive and helpful at the time.
Do you find talking books useful? I say that because I know a lot of people who had the long COVID brain fog, who just found they couldn't process reading words, whereas a talking book, audio book, it was easier. Is that the same for you?
Yes. So, yeah, I definitely I listen to a lot of audiobooks and podcasts and things like that, and find that easier to follow. Books, I love reading now. And for me specifically, I bought a Kindle, and that's again changed my life. For me, that's what I found easier to read on than an actual book. It's different for everyone. Things like lines on a page can help certain people, or different color text and paper can help certain people. And it's slightly different, and you just find what works best for you. But yeah, things like that are really helpful for processing information quicker for me.
Interesting. When we learn to read the written word, we've generally learned to speak first. And so we're starting to interpret symbols. And many of us, if you watch small children, or many of us adults, actually, you can see our lips moving when we're reading. Many of us then end up reading much faster than we can speak. But to start with, we read at spoken level. I met someone recently who I think was an interesting, very interesting lady, who was a highly trained, highly skilled professional. But it wasn't until she was in her 40s that it became obvious that there was an issue. And I bring this up as a story because there's going to be a question behind it in a moment. And she asked me to slow down. So here was somebody who was very articulate and could probably have, you know, talked articulately. And we make assumptions about people when they talk very articulately and convincingly. This person said to me, she said, "Andrew, could you just slow down, please?" And I sort of slowed down my speech. And I said, "Can I just ask why?" She said, "I have to convert everything you're saying into pictures." So she was able to be articulate at a very rapid rate and speaking very fast and getting a lot of complicated concepts over. But when it came to the reception of information from speech, she had to convert to pictures, which I found fascinating.
I do that sometimes personally, not all the time, but I think certain people with dyslexia do that. Rather than seeing in words, you see in pictures, because the words. So for one example, when words on a page can move around, it can be a bit fuzzy. That's what some people with dyslexia have, and I find that myself. Whereas if you think of it in pictures, they're not moving in that way, and then they're not complicated. It simplifies it in some way.
How interesting. And David, our producer, has just put up, there's a very interesting study that shows by slowing down, by spacing the words to two or three a line and making much less words per page, actually the speed of reading can go up. Has that been true for you as well?
Yeah, I think part of that is you see tiny writing, lots of it on a page, and it's just overwhelming. Whereas if it's spaced out more, it's slightly bigger, maybe a different colour, I can get through a book much quicker, even if it's a bigger book, just purely because of that.
And you've raised that really important distinction between learning disability, which is a general difficulty, often with a lower IQ, and learning difficulty, which is a specific difficulty like dyslexia, and that the two are very different. And I was just looking up the famous people who've had dyslexia. I'm sure you've looked it up as well. It includes Albert Einstein, who is, you know, one of the most brightest people you can think of. Yeah. Tom Cruise. And I'm sure you've got a long list of other people with dyslexia who succeeded.
A few that I particularly like, and like you said, I have looked it up. So Ed Sheeran, he writes songs. Agatha Christie, writing for a living, that was what she did, you know. And then even like John Lennon writes songs as well. And maybe there's something in that, because they're creative, or more creative in that way, that actually the spelling didn't matter, because it was the words they were saying is what that mattered.
Interesting. Can I just sort of change gear slightly? So we've been talking about dyslexia. How does it compare or contrast? Do you know anything about how it might contrast to dyspraxia or ADHD or other conditions? Is there any relationship? Are they completely distinct?
Is dyspraxia the numbers? Or is that where you're wobbly on your feet? I can't remember which way around it is.
the praxia is the movement and the being able to do things with hands.
I think
coordination.
Yeah, I think they definitely can come together for some people. I would say I sometimes numbers dyscalculia. Is that it?
Yes. Yes.
Yes. So, for example, at work, sometimes if I'm doing using numbers rather than, for example, saying 54, I'll be thinking 54, but what comes out is 45. So you just have to double check yourself with things like that. But yeah, they certainly do come together, those two. And then the dyspraxia, I don't know, to be honest. I'm not sure about that one.
How interesting. And can I just give a personal story at this point? I would count myself moderately articulate, and I can't touch type, but 30 years of using a computer, I can type quite fast. If I'm on one machine, I type accurately with no spelling. On another machine, which has actually got Wi-Fi, or when Wi-Fi is on, it, curiously, and I don't know why this is working for me, but I actually misspell a lot. And very curiously, if Wi-Fi is on, I can't think so clearly. But goodness knows what's happening. I would not say that's dyslexia, or but what's going on? I just don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, very curious. Peter, bring us back down to earth.
No. Well, I think you raised the point, Andrew, that all of us have bits of our brain. We kind of take them for granted until something doesn't work properly. And so for me, again, giving a personal thing, I'm left-handed. So you were saying, Lorna, about switching numbers around. I used to write mirror writing, like that other famous left-handed Leonardo da Vinci. So I found it really hard to work out which way round letters should be. So I think a lot of us will have these bits in our brain that just stop things functioning as we want them to.
Yeah, and I think you're right. We're all different, but different is a good thing. And you learn to deal with what you do well and not so well, and how you cope with those things, don't you?
And you clearly function at an incredibly high level doing the job you do. Does it bring you any difficulties day to day, or do you feel you've got it cracked now?
There still are difficulties. I think, yeah, I've been doing it quite a long time now. So, yeah, I have overcome that. I think what I would love and what I'm trying to do at the moment is to go fully digitalized. And that will make a world of difference for myself and others, I think. Although there's obviously the flip side of that, people who don't love technology, but we move with the times, don't we? But that would definitely help. So writing notes, it's a running joke on the ward. I used to have the worst handwriting. However, we got a new nurse and she's worse than me. So I'm not now the worst. But there are certain things. One thing that for a while that I've overcome now was ward rounds. So you're moving through patients very quickly, writing down things very quickly, and being told what to write down. And that was quite challenging initially, but move past that and is fine now. And that's the thing, you come across things forever in your life that you find challenging, and it's how you deal with it.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's a really important message for anyone, isn't it? That we all have different things that challenge us, and it's how you deal with it.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. Do you have any tips for how to deal positively with difficulties in your life?
Yeah. So, well, like we said, I think everybody has challenges, whoever you are, and whatever you do. And it's just working within what you've got to make it as easy as possible. I personally think knowing is really important. So if you have dyslexia or you know, dyspraxia or any of those other ones, knowing that you've got it, other people can then know, and it's nothing to hide. I've never found like work or challenging like that because of it, like as in telling people at work. But knowing means you can do something about it, because if you don't know, you might think you're just a little bit stupid when actually it's something you just struggle with. So that was definitely an important thing. And I mean, spell check is my best friend. But yeah, I think it's just figuring out what works for you and what helps you personally, and whatever that might be.
Can I take a slightly different tack? And we're talking about dyslexia, and I'd just like to sort of explore hidden meanings and jargon. So this comes from the Greek dis meaning bad and lexia learning, and we've got dyscalculia, so that would be bad, as opposed to eulexia, if there is such a word, would be good learning. I'm just curious how much language can become pejorative by its descriptive ways of the words it's used. And Peter, I think we may have shared before, but medicine is full of jargon, and I'm sure, Lorna, you've discovered this. And the reason it's full of jargon is two reasons, and essentially it uses a lot of Latin and Greek. And it's two reasons. One is it's descriptive, and two is it's a conspiracy, as George Bernard Shaw said, against the layman. Because, Lorna, if you came to me 300 years ago and said, I've got a red itchy rash, it's driving me mad, I don't know why I've got it, and I said to you, well, you've got a red itchy rash, it's driving you mad, I haven't got a clue either, you wouldn't pay me half a bent groat. Whereas if I said, Miss Edwards, I'm so glad you've come to me because this is a special interest of mine. I think this is dermatitis rubra irritativa incognita lunatica, and that'll be 15 guineas. You know, you would...
You sound like you know what you're talking about.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think particularly within the medical world, but you could probably apply that to a lot of worlds, that you have your own language. As some of it is helpful, some of it is not. And I think, you know, there can be five words for the same thing in the medical world, when actually you might just be talking about, I don't know, increased work of breathing. There are multiple words you could use, but not everyone is going to know them all. So then it makes you feel better personally, but actually it's not helpful for anyone around you, or for my work, the parents around you that don't understand those words or don't necessarily understand them.
I think you've absolutely hit the nail on the head there. So jargon can either be a way for people to use precise language and not get misunderstandings, or it can be a way of obfuscating and as Andrew says, charging more money to the client, as doctors used to do and lawyers still do. So it's the way we use language, perhaps, more than whether we have difficulty with the spelling of it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there are plenty of words I understand but I can't spell. and I think I touched on it earlier, but I think because of my dyslexia. So, for example, and I don't know if you guys have come across this ever, sometimes there might be a medical professional chatting to parents, and they'll have they're just in the background doing whatever I'm doing. They'll have had their chat. I'll go back over a few minutes later, and the parents might be like, "Oh, what did they mean by that, Ben? And what did they mean by that?" And then I can go through, a level that I think of it, and that sometimes helps, I think. And then you get maybe the best of both worlds.
So, actually, in spite of dyslexia, you're communicating much more clearly than the person who doesn't have dyslexia?
Potentially. I would like to think it's a skill that I have and I've honed over years, but I think dyslexia has helped with that. And maybe because I've struggled with that, I can understand a little bit more and use that to my benefit for others that are struggling with something.
And does that mean that you know about or can help people with, as well as your own strategies and your excellent communication skills, that you're able to find people resources and make them more accessible or friendlier to people who are having difficulty understanding some complex concepts or neurodivergent or any other issues?
Yeah, I think if you are going through something, most likely you've looked into it and you have more knowledge about it, and then you can pass that on to others. So yeah, definitely. And things I know I look out for, so if we're giving information to people and try and do it in Word, but also you might have some leaflets and things, I'll try and find those ones that are most useful and most accessible to all.
Yes, a picture can tell a thousand words sometimes, can't it?
And it really comes back to the idea that correct spelling and the correct use of grammar and so on, it's a means to an end. It's a tool for communication. But actually, the critical thing is to communicate well, not to talk down to people, not to use difficult words to make yourself sound better and to confuse them, but to communicate. And it sounds as though almost through having your own difficulties with language, you've learned that skill of communicating clearly to others?
Thank you. Yeah, I think so. I think it's in that sense, it's really helped that I've, yeah, particularly when I was younger and it was a difficult thing. I now can see if people are struggling of ways to help them, maybe that others might not have noticed potentially. I have a great team, totally an amazing team that I work with. And everyone has their things that they're particularly good at. But yeah, I like to think that that's one of mine.
How fascinating. There's a personality assessment tool called Myers-Briggs, which categorizes people into, I think it's about 16 different areas that we could be in total, because we're all different. And the name of the book, which was written about it, first of all, is Gifts Differing. So we all have different gifts and we all have different ways. There's no right way. There's no wrong way. We are who we are. We are how we are. And our challenge is to know ourselves and to make the best of it. And I suppose the challenge with dyslexia for you, with a family member for me and for others, is if we don't know about it, we can make all sorts of compensations, but there might be an easier way if only we knew.
Yeah, definitely. With any of these types of things, like I said, I think knowing is key and knowledge is key in everyday life. But yeah, if you know, you can help yourself and others can help. And if others also know, they can help you as well. So it's nothing to hide, never.
And David, our producer, I'm sure, is going to put show notes showing how people can find out more about dyslexia. And we'd encourage everybody to do that really as early as possible, because as you say, things have changed. Schools, teachers are much better taught than they used to be about recognizing dyslexia, and adjustments are now made. And you've shown that people can achieve great things.
Yeah, I mean, it's like we said, you know, you can do, it doesn't, shouldn't stop you really doing any job or go anywhere in your life. And there are lots of famous and very intelligent people that have it, and that hasn't stopped them at all. But yeah.
Thank you. And Lorna, are there any national charities or local charities or organisations apart from that inspirational teacher that have helped you or that you can recommend?
Yeah. So, I mean, the big one is the British Dyslexia Association. And they've got all sorts of information on there. But part of that is, it will, if you put in your postcode, you can find local dyslexic assessors in your area. There's another one that I really like, which is called Made by Dyslexia. So it's a charity. They're on Instagram. There's also a book, and it's a lady called Kate Griggs. And it's just, the book is great, but there's just loads of information on there of what to look for, who to get in touch with, support for the parents as well as the child or those around them. And then our local one is the Somerset Dyslexia Association, which is also a charity. I haven't personally got in contact with them because I came across them later on in life when personally I didn't feel like I needed the support, but they have got a helpline, they have a drop-in session at the library, they've got a website, they do great things locally.
And we're very grateful that you have come on to this podcast. You did so because you were inspired by Patrick talking about how he overcame his stuttering. And I'm sure you will also inspire our listeners in discussing how you've overcome your dyslexia. So thank you so much for sharing that. We're really grateful to you.
Oh, thank you very much. It's been great to chat to you guys. And it's just, yeah, it's something that it's something you have for lifelong, and at times it's been more challenging than others, but it's just something, if you have it, you deal with it and get on with life, I guess.
Thanks ever so much, Lorna. SomersetDyslexia.co.uk is the local one. MadeByDyslexia.org is another one. BDADyslexia.org.uk. And these will all be on the show notes if you're listening and trying to scribble very fast, as I'm saying, or type very fast, or using voice dictation software. Lorna, thank you so much for coming along. And if any other listeners are inspired by your story and Patrick's story and feel that you'd like to contribute to the Somerset Emotional Wellbeing podcast, we'd be very welcome. We'd be very delighted to welcome your approach. But Lorna, thank you so much for coming along, and keep up all the great work you're doing, and I'm sure there are lots of patients and parents of patients that benefit greatly in Somerset and in Taunton from your professional and kind and caring approach. So thank you for that.
Oh, thank you, Andrew. Thank you, Peter. It's been great to chat with you guys.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Somerset Emotional Wellbeing Podcast, hosted by Dr. Andrew Tresidder and Dr. Peter Bagshaw. The show was created by David Seeley and was produced by Rob Huns Music on behalf of the Somerset Clinical Commissioning Group.